The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society's 26th season of the Summer Jazz Concert Series presents the Eddie Gomez Trio, featuring Stephen Carlson and Stephen Pruitt, Sunday, June 30th at 7 p.m. Information and tickets at digjazz.com.
This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 18th, 2024. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead today, the work needed to establish the first Black Fayetteville Historic District. Emma Willis talks about the effort with Randy Wilburn for the latest episode of his I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast, and we'll hear part of their conversation. And then later, Dallas Ponce, a musical duo from Argentina, playing the country blues of Charlie Patton and Robert Johnson. They'll play for us in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. First, after Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders signed the LEARNS Act into law in 2023, several groups have tried to put some of the policies in the bill to a vote. One group, 4AR Kids, is in the process of gathering signatures to petition a ballot measure, the Arkansas Education Rights Amendment. The group has until July 5th to gather 90,704 signatures. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth spoke with Laura Marsh, the Northwest Arkansas representative of 4AR Kids, about the progress and what the measure would actually do.
And can I ask, you know, why did you want to get involved with this signature gathering process, and then also maybe being even more, a little more involved with this organization and with the amendment?
Well, I'm a mom of four boys, and I was very blessed to be able to be a stay-at-home mom. And I know that not everybody is able to do that. I work with women who are living in poverty and difficult circumstances, things like pre-K, after-school childcare, what to do with their kids in the summer are just a real challenge to them. And so as I was blessed to be able to do those things for my own children, I know that there are a lot of financial barriers, and those are all things that are good for all kids. And really, that's what this amendment is about. It's about creating a new status quo for kids in Arkansas so that we really can equip them to be ready to learn once they are in school.
When you're out there and people are asking you questions about the amendment, or maybe they don't know really, you know, much about maybe the LEARNS Act or what this amendment is about, how do you break it down for them and explain to them what this is and what the amendment will do?
Right. Well, first of all, it's important to note that this is not an anti-LEARNS Act. This is not just a retaliation amendment. This has been part of a bigger conversation, not just between Democrats or independents or Republicans. It's really a bipartisan issue amongst a whole bunch of groups of people that serve kids and love kids in the state. There's also an accountability piece of the amendment as well. We really believe that we need to protect our tax dollars and the way they're spent. And so just making sure that no matter where the tax dollars go, that kids are served academically, and that they have the same standards and the same testing as public schools do, so that we can have equity across our education system in the state.
Yeah. And are there any questions that you get maybe often, like people, if you're talking to them and bring up this amendment and the ballot measure, is there anything that comes up often, questions that people have?
Well, I think one of the questions that comes from maybe, say, a private school, maybe a private religious school is, am I going to be able to continue to teach the values and the mission behind our school? And the answer to that is absolutely. This does not prevent any kind of school teaching about the Bible or other faiths. That's something that they have the right to do. But we are also asking that they implement the very good standards that we have going in the state of Arkansas. Like I said before, I'm a civics teacher, and we have amazing standards that really guide the instruction that I give my students. And so if it's good for public schools, it's good for all kids.
But I think that's where a lot of the opposition comes in. I think a lot of people believe that in implementing this, you are restricting maybe parents' choice and the competitiveness of public education in the state. I mean, how do you respond to that, and maybe what response would you have to that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how this is going to restrict education. Again, public schools, we live in this world every day. We implement what the state lays out for us, and it's good for us. It's good for kids. Public schools earn a state report card based on a lot of different factors, and we do testing. And so when it comes to private schools, there's really kind of an unknown as far as a parent kind of looking in. So we think it's good for parents to know what's going to be taught and to have the same types of assessments. Schools that have a certain charter or a certain faith mission are absolutely free to continue those missions and those faith values. So nothing in this amendment restricts that in any way, shape, or form.
And going forward, so you guys have until, I think it's mid-July, right, to have the signatures turn in?
Right. We have until mid-July, and we're real hopeful. The process is going. It's going slowly. But again, the message resonates with Arkansans, because if there's one thing that we can all agree with, it's that we want our kids to succeed.
Yeah, it's a difficult time to be politically active around education right now. And so when you're out and you're talking to people, has it been hard to, you know, how do you de-escalate some of those conversations and just get to talking to people kind of one-on-one? Because, you know, it's about kids, it's about education. And how has that sort of been, or has it been contentious when you've been out talking to people?
So honestly, it really has not been contentious as we go out and as we talk to people. Most people are more than willing to sign a petition and at least put it on the ballot. Our state motto is Regnat Populus, which means let the people rule. And so I'll say just for myself, there's going to be a bunch of ballots out there. I'm not supportive of everything that I'm seeing out there, but I'm certainly willing to sign a petition and put it to the vote. I think that's real important that we all get to have a say. And so this is about us all having a say about how we want education to look in the state. And so a lot of people say, sure, you know, I'm happy to sign. I know our opposition is running a campaign that says decline to sign. And so we're the complete opposite. We say, hey, just sign it, take some time, think about it, talk about it when the election rolls around. If you decide that's not what you want to vote for, you know, we completely understand. But people are passionate about kids. And people are passionate about some of these issues that I mentioned, especially the ones that are really a financial burden to a lot of parents.
And then if it does get on the ballot, and then if it is approved by voters, what would sort of be the timeline for that? What would be the next steps of putting this into practice?
If the ballot initiative is improved, there will certainly be a rollout period where I know private schools are going to have to decide if they want to continue to take public money or if that's not going to be right for them. I imagine there'll be a period of having other schools learn about the same standards and testing that we follow in public schools. And then, of course, the legislature is tasked by this amendment for appropriating the funding for the programs that are outlined in the amendment. So it's going to take a little bit of time to implement, but I think it's going to be worth the wait.
That was Laura Marsh with the group 4AR Kids, speaking with reporter Daniel Carruth. Ozarks at Large reached out to the ballot question committee, Arkansans for Students and Educators, that's the group opposing this measure, for comment, but we did not receive a response. About noon yesterday, a few dozen people, including Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan, walked across Nelson Hackett Boulevard to admire a just-completed mural titled Remembrance. Created by Joel Storé, Remembrance covers 90 feet of a wall and about six generations of Fayetteville Black residents. Standing in front of her work of bold yellows, reds, and blues, she says it's a bit overwhelming to be finished with the mural.
It's a little heartbreaking at times because I did become emotionally attached to a piece of cement, and to pull away from that has been somewhat difficult. However, the community responses and engagement have made it, have made me really appreciate this, and I feel very humbled and honored.
Jay Alexander, a sixth generation Northwest Arkansan with family ties from Logan County to Fayetteville, says he's related to many of the people depicted in the mural, families who've lived, worked, and gathered for decades in a South Fayetteville neighborhood a few minutes walk from the art. He says he applauds Story's work at capturing the figures of a community.
I find that we often don't tell the story of the women that were of Fayetteville in that time and their struggles. And my great aunt Dorothy, she had her struggles. She was a very quiet, unassuming person. And so I think it would be great to know what she would think about being quasi-famous for being up on a mural. And so she would throw up her hands and say, Jay!
Jessica Gray is also related to many of the people in the mural, and she provided many of the photographs that Joelle Soray used for inspiration.
Yeah, I see photographs, and I send her links to just the history, African-American history in this area, and provided a little bit of photos and some articles about, you know, the first integration and all the players and, you know, relatives and things like that, yeah.
What's it like to see this?
It's crazy. It's a little unbelievable, overwhelming. She did a wonderful job. I don't think either one of us knew it was going to be this big as far as sparking conversations.
The artist says those conversations are exactly the kind of reaction she began to enjoy as she neared completion of the work. She says whether the conversation is about somebody a passerby recognizes or not, there's a healthy amount of curiosity generated by the art.
Creating this mural really overall added a sense of agency, and that was more or less the goal of this entire project. I really looked at who was in charge of it and what they were looking for. Knowing the history of the street was also incredibly important. So overall, I felt like this was a strong narrative to use, and the responses have just been amazing. Over the last couple of weeks, I've had more people share with me that they grew up here or that they knew some of the folks or some of the businesses that were nearby. I got to learn a lot about Fayetteville's history.
Jay Alexander says he agrees that the mural is able to spur dialogue about a city's past, present, and future. For him, walking by the artwork can evoke personal memories and family stories.
These two are my cousins, and this is Bobby Barker, who resides in this city just down on 15th Street when he was in the Navy as well. So some amazing, interesting stories, but the most interesting to me is David Hackett. I got to learn this story only through the painting of this mural. I did not know his story until Joelle started painting the mural. So I think it's a fantastic educational device and opportunity for others to learn.
The mural also includes a tribute to Nelson Hackett, an enslaved man who escaped from Fayetteville to Canada, where slavery had been eliminated, a journey of more than 1,000 miles. Nelson Hackett's subsequent extradition back to enslavement in Fayetteville created an international legal outrage. Arkansas Governor Archibald Yell authorized Nelson Hackett's return to Fayetteville in 1842, where Nelson Hackett was publicly whipped and sold to traitors. Last June, the street once bearing Archibald Yell's name officially became Nelson Hackett Boulevard. A plaque detailing Hackett's life can be found on the Fayetteville Square. Jay Alexander says he's glad Nelson Hackett's story is memorialized, but he's also happy artist Joelle Soray included subsequent generations of Fayetteville residents in her work as well.
We have Bobby, who also worked in the industrial side of Fayetteville for 35 years and just retired recently. And so, yes, ordinary people, not the ones that are always so famous for what they accomplished or didn't accomplish. And this is a really poignant story because Dorothy's great-grandfather, her grandfather, his name was Thomas Bettis. And unfortunately, we had, back in the day, something called the Night Riders. And he was killed during that time in our history. And she survived that, her mother survived that, and that tells an amazing story of how far we've come as a culture, as a people, in having a dialogue and having a conversation.
At a reception celebrating the mural's completion at the Yvonne Richardson Center, Joelle Soray said she hoped her art would inspire conversations, but also more representative art.
I hope that this mural continues to engage conversations about what Fayetteville was at the time, and I hope other artists can also follow suit in helping highlight other members of the community who may have been underrepresented or more or less a part of the community that needs to be seen.
The 90-foot mural Remembrance can be seen on Nelson Hackett Boulevard in Fayetteville. This is Ozarks at Large.
You're listening to the Victor Military Band with Those Charlie Chaplin Feet, and you're on the Soundbeat. Charlie Chaplin would become the world's biggest star, but the first emergence of the Little Tramp played second fiddle to go-karts. The iconic character debuted in 1914's At the Kid Auto Races in Venice. It was filmed on location at an actual road race held in Venice, California that year, among a crowd who showed up to watch some auto racing and instead became extras in film history. A year after the film, Chaplin would have never been able to walk those streets unnoticed. A year after that, he would have needed bodyguards. The Victor Military Band was a virtual revolving door of about a dozen musicians led by Edward T. King, and were the first to record W.C. Handy's classic, St. Louis Blues. You can see the whole film right now at soundbeat.org. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Libraries. I'm Brett Barry.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for spending part of your Tuesday with us. Work continues on establishing the first Black Historic District in Fayetteville. This week's episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas includes conversation about that effort. Randy Wilburn, the host of the podcast, talks with Emma Willis, the founder of Impact Period, and a leading representative of the NWA Black Heritage Organization. In this excerpt, Emma Willis discusses the variety of tasks required to establish a historic district.
What I will say is everybody thinks they have a historic district until you get into the definitions of one. What I think is fun about Americans, our brains, semantics, we think because a house or a home or something is on a national registry, it is therefore a historic district.
Yeah.
Fayetteville, unfortunately, does not have any historic districts. You do have some historic places.
Well, you would think with a land-grant institution in our backyard that we would have a historic district.
You would think a lot of things because you have the university in your backyard. But this is more about where people need to be educated on all the facets of government. You can't just think about what's immediately close to you. You have to have the curiosity and desire to just peer into things a little bit more. And so as we went through this process, when I was originally courted for the job, I kind of didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't something that I wanted to do. And it actually took an act of God to make me want to stop and do this. Sat down with Ms. Sharon Killian, had a long, 4-hour conversation. We got through her work and the passion was very clear. It was that I do not want this work to end with me.
Sure.
I got to figure out how it keeps going on. And so Northwest Arkansas Black Heritage, for people that don't know, is focused on education, advocacy, and then the preservation of Black history here in the state of Arkansas and Northwest Arkansas. If you immediately go to Google those organizations and try to see who else is doing it, you're going to come up with things like, you know, preserving cemeteries and putting them on a registry so people know where Black cemeteries are and people can find their family members from ages ago. But there's nothing as substantial as an organization is willing to go out there and try to preserve the spaces.
Yeah.
And so this is a significant undertaking for them underneath preservation and honestly education under their three kind of like strategic pillars in the organization. And so the preservation piece has been an effort that has taken the city of Fayetteville as well. It's not just an organization standing up one day and saying, we want to do this. It has taken all of us. And when I say all of us, it's me, a crowd of people that are going unwillingly because I just kind of drag them along for stuff. And then the city, who has made it very clear that they are learning as they go too in the course of this project.
Yeah.
And I want to do nothing more than to bring more people along for this, because I think there's a lot of history here that needs to be preserved. It's not going to just end at this historic district and our job to incorporate it. It's going to be other spaces who have Black identities, Black background, Black stories for us to come in, archive, document, make sure we create the spaces where that information lives. So as Black people and anybody else, you have an accurate depiction of the people.
Yeah.
You don't want to get into this battle of people wanting to come up with ideas or stereotypes that lead a narrative for a population, but instead allow us to collect the things and give you an opportunity to peer into our world, understand our culture, because that's where we get to at the end of the day with the creation of this Black Historic District, is the fact that we are asking people to take a day and walk through the neighborhoods that we got to call home.
Yeah.
Understand that it's no different than any other place you would have walked through, but it was distinctly blighted and it was subjected to Jim Crow South laws. So there's these opportunities to see some of the things that have harmed American society in action and how they've created these missed opportunities for populations because they just did not identify them as being human for a really long time, having the opportunity to be property owners for a really long time. So civil rights meant a lot for Black people. One of the big issues I'm dealing with on this project, a lot of time Black property owners do not have estate set up. They don't have wills.
Yeah.
And it's because we couldn't have wills for a really long time. And so, again, I have to just, for any listener, this project is so huge. It's not as easy, again, as just wanting to create a historic district, but having the willingness to educate a population of people on all the things that they have never been able to learn about. And make sure, which is an aging population, I have to let you know, that most of my Black property owners in this neighborhood are well over 65.
Oh, easily.
And so because of that, I have a very distinct learning curve that I am operating in.
Right.
And I will always humble myself because those are my elders. And so it's having the patience and the compassion to walk people through a project that is not my project. It is their project. I actually work for the people in this neighborhood.
Sure.
So while Northwest Arkansas Black Heritage hired me, I have to listen to the community's voices as I go through the course of this project.
So, you know, I'm curious to know, have you found everyone to be trusting of the process or?
No.
Because, I mean, I think, you know, there is a reality for African Americans that there is a certain level of distrust.
It's the first question I was asked.
With the system, right?
It's like,
are you going to take my house from me? Yeah. How does this work? Is the city now going to own my property?
It was the first questions. And when you deal with marginalized populations, you understand education attainment rates. I will say this is a highly educated population. I will say I am utterly impressed at everybody's background because these are the people's families that believed in education. These people have gone to elementary, middle school, high school together. Some went to University of Arkansas. Some moved on and went to other universities outside of the state. But they're property owners, which is a significant thing in the story of the American dream.
Right.
And because they're property owners, they have always just trusted that their property was theirs. But in an age of scams and frauds and people telling you all the things that they will do, it creates a little bit of apathy. And now I have to be a little bit on guard about anything that sounds too good to be true. So in the first couple of weeks of doing this, I made it a point to reach out to Black property owners first.
Yeah.
And we sat down and had what was a very direct conversation about what a historic district even means.
Yeah.
And the very first question I had was, how is this any different from the other promises people have made us? You have to realize that this is what disenfranchised looks like. This is what it looks like to have all of the things that you thought you were going to have ripped away from you because somebody was not being honest or forthcoming. And so in the first couple of weeks we spent a great deal of time with our Black property owners. And that has to do with just the legacy of the neighborhood, but also just where the education needed to come in.
The entire conversation between Emma Willis and host Randy Wilburn about the establishment of the first Black Historic District in Fayetteville can be heard on the latest episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. It's available at your preferred podcast platform at imnorthwestarkansas.com and at the podcast page at KUAF.com. Tonight and tomorrow night, we have a chance to hear early 20th century Delta blues as channeled through a pair of talented Argentinian singers, musicians, and researchers. The duo Dallas Ponce is a renowned Argentinian duo. They're touring Mississippi and Arkansas for the first time this month. They'll perform at BC's Blue Shack and Juke Joint inside the Pryor Center on the Fayetteville Square beginning at 6 tonight. No admission charge. Then at Murano's on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Fayetteville tomorrow night, also beginning at 6. Yesterday afternoon, they stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
We have been researching on African-American music since 1992. We first find, you know, a three-box set of Robin Johnson that have a booklet inside. And we started reach to this music through him. We saw the pictures on the leaflet, and we always dreamed to be in those places. And now it happened, and we can understand all what are happening. We like to thank Jamie Atkinson, because he's our connection between South America and United States, because we play in a 4th of July event in Buenos Aires, and he was there, and we started playing Charlie Patton, and he couldn't believe it, and we became friends. And this song we play, All Death by Charlie Patton and Bertha Lee, because Mississippi bluesmen used to sing spirituals with their wives. And we are a marriage, it's a start.
Would you like to play?
Yeah, sure.
Just look what the Lord done. Just look what the Lord done.
I said, just look.
The
Lord,
good Lord. Just look what the Lord done.
Lord, I know my time is long.
One more,
when death came in the room.
One morning when death came in the room.
I said, one morning when death came in the room.
Lord, I know my time is long.
Oh hush, somebody's calling me.
Oh hush, somebody's calling me.
I say, oh hush, to the Lord, somebody's calling me.
Lord, I know my time is long.
One morning when death came in the room.
One morning when death came in the room.
I say, one morning when death came in the room.
Lord, I know my time is long.
Oh death, done stole my mother and gone.
Oh death.
Down
stole my mother and go.
Yeah, oh dear. Good Lord. Down stole my mother and go.
Lord, I know my time is long.
Don't move
my pillow
until you turn my bed around.
Don't move my pillow until you turn my bed around.
I say, don't move my pillow until you turn my bed around.
Lord, I know my time is long.
Oh, hush, somebody's calling me.
Oh, hush, oh, hush, somebody's calling me.
I say, oh, hush,
oh, hush,
the Lordy,
Lord,
somebody's calling me.
Lord, I know, Lord, I know my time alone.
Oh, that was amazing.
Thank
oh,
you.
Oh, that was
thank
fantastic.
Thank you very much.
So now I'm imagining this event that was at an embassy.
That's correct.
In
That's
Buenos
correct.
Aires.
That's correct. Every year we have at our embassies worldwide, we invite cultural acts that represent America. In fact, we have McDonald's. We serve McDonald's hamburgers among other things. And one of the things we like to do is we like to showcase American culture. And American culture through music specifically. And it just so happened, my wife and I were greenhorns. It was our first assignment overseas. And we went to our first reception, and we were ready for some really prim and proper classical music or something really formal. And I was just sitting there having a hot dog, and I heard this song coming out of there, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And so that was the first of many of times in my career where I just kept finding people that loved the blues music from Arkansas, from Mississippi, from this region. It's where I'm from, and so personally and professionally, I've tried very hard to showcase this whenever I have the opportunity. So that's one of the things that we've been working on in several projects, and I'm just so thrilled that they're up here in Fayetteville.
So you mentioned that you found this Robert Johnson. You saw the book.
Yeah.
But where? Where did you – I mean, did you go looking for blues? How did you get introduced?
Well, because I have, a Beatles band in the 80s, when I saw the first album, I noticed that – all the songs don't belong to the Beatles, belong to other people. And I started, searching back. I came to Chuck Berry, and then but this guy, Chuck Berry, learned from maybe Lowell Fulson, and maybe Lowell Fulson learned by Blind Lemon Jefferson, And we arrived to those country pioneers, country blues pioneers, that Blind Lemon Jefferson, Sam House, Charlie Patton, King Solomon Hill, that kind of musicians, and even the East Coast blues that has another, birth. They listen to the records that came from the North, and they play such a different country blues in that area. And we started in researching because we love the folklores and this particular folklore, like blues. We pretty love the country blues. And
do you mind playing another song?
Yeah, we will play, just dedicated to you, man. Georgia Blues, That Lonesome Ray. This song was recorded by Blind Blake and Irene Scruggs on lead vocal.
Man I love.
cemetery, plant flowers on his grave. I've got the blues about him, Lord, that's why I rave.
Dallas Ponce in the Furman Garner Performance Studio late yesterday afternoon. They are performing at BC's Blue Shack and Juke Joint inside the Pryor Center on the Fayetteville Square tonight at 6. No admission charge. They'll be at Murano's on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Fayetteville tomorrow night, also beginning at 6. They performed two more songs for us in the performance studio that we're definitely going to get on the air sometime later this week. Oh, and I should mention that their visit to Fayetteville, coordinated in part by the Music Education Initiative and the Ozark Blues Society. This is Ozarks at Large. The number of people forcibly displaced from their homes worldwide has risen to nearly 120 million, according to a new study from the United Nations. Ahead of World Refugee Day this Thursday, we're hearing stories from some refugees who've resettled here in Northwest Arkansas.
My name is Marcel Sherzad. I am from Afghanistan, and I'm the case manager in Canopy NWA. I arrived in the U.S. after the fall of Taliban on August 2021. It was a very stressful journey because it was unexpected, and we didn't know that the Taliban just suddenly came and raided Kabul. So me and my younger brother, we evacuated through the evacuation through the American army, and on the border, so we separated from my families because of the Taliban roadblock, and it was a very difficult experience for me because we didn't know that we are going, and it was just it was very difficult. I think the only common thing that we all have was just the safety and the hope that everyone's, when I talk with them, when we were in the military base, so people are just sharing their experience and sharing their thoughts. But the only common thing that we all do have was only hope. But hope for me here was to getting a better future, better education, and have a brighter future. I'm studying international relations and political science. I hope to work and to pursue my professional career at United Nations organization, and hopefully I can share my experience and I can have something to those people that who suffered through the war, and for those who are vulnerable, and to those that their voice are not here. In Afghanistan, if the woman doesn't have a right to pursue their education, so, but now when you're in the US, so you have the right to choose that if you wanted to be educated and if you wanted to have your future. As my mom always advised me, like, being a woman in Afghanistan, so women always depend on their men. Like when you're young, you depend on your father. When you get married, you depend on your husband. And when you're old, you depend on your son. So I don't want you to be like that. I want you to choose your destiny, and I want you to have the right to how you choose your life. A refugee means to me is resilience and hope. It means someone's who passed through all the challenges and seek a better future and have a hope. For all of the people that they are coming or displaced, it wasn't easy, just the adjustment. So it still sometimes happened to me that sometimes I feel like still I feel like I'm as an outsider. But I think it's normal. So I just want to, I just wanted to tell to the people that they should learn more about refugees, and they should know that why they flee their homelands and how much they are valuable when they share their skills, their education, and their rich culture to the new community.
Marcel Shersad spoke with us at Canopy NWA in Fayetteville. Canopy, the region's refugee resettlement agency, will hold a drop-in event on World Refugee Day this Thursday at Mount Sequoia from 2 until 7 p.m. For information, Canopy NWA on Facebook. On Thursday evening, four Northwest Arkansas-based songwriters will be performing at the Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville. This performance is one of a series of concerts hosted by Lacey Hampton and Songwriters in the Round, a recently formed collective of local songwriters and musicians who meet once a month to showcase their work. Thursday night's show will feature artists Eric Spahn, Josh Noren, Jordan Lucas, and Charlie Mellinger. Lacey Hampton, Josh Noren, and Eric Spahn recently spoke with Ozarks at Large's Sophia Narani about the show and the meaning behind it.
Last year, like the very start of the year, I like to make big plans and big goals in January because I feel like that's when we're already like making New Year's resolutions and we're kind of in a mindset of readiness for change and big steps. And so I had reached out to Samantha Hunt at the time, and we were more just talking about like personal goals and things that we wanted to accomplish in our music and in our lives. And then it kind of escalated really quickly to, you remember when there were more songwriters in the rounds and like opportunities for songwriters to be together and share our songs and things like that? And we're like, yeah, that hasn't really happened as much since COVID. And so it kind of became, it started as what do we need? And then it was what do we feel like we can do in our community? Like, what does our community need? I think I had told her that I wanted it to be Meteor because they had a kind of a rough time during COVID. They're doing really well now and bringing in really awesome musicians, but I wanted it to be Meteor just because, and it's a really neat spot with really cool history. Like, if you've never been to Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville, I encourage you to just go check it out because you just walk in and you're like, okay, you can like feel the history. It used to be an old movie theater. It's a guitar shop. It's a venue, and they've got this awesome stage and lights, and they've got a lower room and a balcony. They do all sorts of events and things out there. It's turned into a really cool thing. It all, like I said, it escalated from what do we want to what do we want to do for the community, and then started reaching out to songwriters. And that was the part that kind of blew me away because we both were able to make a really long list, and then most of them said yes. The whole thing has been like, wow, if you need something, chances are you're not alone in that. Like, other people need that avenue to share their music, share new stuff. It's been going for over a year now, and we've only had two repeats, and I was one of them. That many songwriters, four per month, just the caliber of music in Northwest Arkansas and songwriters has kind of totally blown me away.
And as you said, it's monthly, so it's open to the public and people can come and watch songwriters perform. Yeah, go into that.
So Thursday the 20th, this will be our first round that's all dudes. Our first one was all women. It was last March in 2023. We did it all women because it was Women's History Month. So we had four women, and that was a lot of fun. I was on that one with Samantha Hunt and Candy Lee and Emily Rowland. And those are some of my closest friends in music, too. So that was really fun to just kind of get it started and riff off each other and harmonize.
That's super cool. You guys are both pretty excited as well to participate.
This is Eric Spahn. Playing live somewhere, especially original music, where you want people to hear this song that they've never heard of before, but you're still background noise in like an event or something where you're like, I could just be saying anything right now and they won't know, but in this experience, it's like the eyes are listening, the ears are listening, you know. It was really cool. I got to attend one a few weeks ago. So, yeah, it was really, I think it's tailored for the people who love to come and listen to music. You know, they don't like when they hear people talking and stuff, and this is not that. This is like you get to experience everything they're putting out there.
This is Josh Noren.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, anytime that I get to play where ears are listening and, like you said, eyes are listening and ears are listening, people actually care to hear, you know, the lyrical content of your songs and, you know, sort of lean in to see what you're going to say. It's super rewarding. You know, it's like the equivalent to like a nice living room house show, because no one's going to talk in a living room because they're going to be the only person talking. So, yeah, like a situation like this where it's one person playing and singing, there's like, there's not a band, so there's not a lot of noise. So if you like set your glass down loudly on the table, like everyone's going to be like, what the, you know? So it sort of forces people to be quiet in a way, which is rewarding for the artist and for the people listening. So yeah, it's, I love it because I feel like I'm being heard. I also love the connection that I get with people in those environments. You know, I can ask a question if I want to, or I just feel like the lyrics reach people better, you know? And for me personally, like my music is I don't know, like I want it to connect with people. That's mm-hmm. like the whole heart behind what music is, you know? It should connect us. And, you know, there's just, you know, feel good music that, you know, you just connect on that level, you know? But I like to connect deeply mm-hmm. with the soul of other people. And I'm not saying that in a creepy way, just in like a human way, you know?
So where not only can people who want to watch the performance find more information, where can songwriters who are looking to get involved find more information about that as well?
Right now, everything is, I'm doing it through my personal music page. That's just kind of how it started and how I have continued to do. So Lacey Hampton Music on Facebook. You can also send me an email. I prefer people that come and want to be part of like the community more than be on the stage. But I want to also hear your stuff. So send me an email to lacey.songwritersintheround@gmail.com, and I would love to listen. And we're booked out through August so far. And yeah, that just connections and like making our web a little bit tighter. I went to Folk Alliance, really inspired me. Just you walk in and you feel the love that that community has for each other. I think John Moreland was playing, and he's also an incredible songwriter from Oklahoma. And just like everybody was looking at him and like the love in their eyes, and like they were singing along with his songs, and just it was palpable. I'm like, we need that. We need that, more of that in Arkansas. And so I do have hopes and visions for like this particular community that we go to Folk Alliance and we have an Arkansas room, and we also have that camaraderie and connection and community that is welcoming not only to each other, but also other people walking in can walk in and feel that and like also be part of. And I have had a lot of like singer-songwriter types and folky and country, like from blues to country. But I also, it's open to if you write songs, it doesn't matter the style. I want to work with that. Mm-hmm. Like we've had hip hop, we had Jasper Logan, who works here, and mm-hmm. he's amazing rapper. And we've had Randall Shreve, which is more like a vaudeville rock. And we've had a little bit of everything. And I really do want it to be open to the dialogue behind the song. I have had people ask me about, or they hear Songwriters in the Round, or people call it a song circle, and it gets a little confusing for people. So I want to clarify that this particular Songwriters in the Round is kind of a Nashville style thing that I've been a part of through like House of Songs and different things. But this is four songwriters are on the stage, each taking turns sharing a song. It's not an open jam. It's not an open mic. It's a curated experience with four songwriters each month. And so it's not the same four songwriters each month. And like I said, we've only had two repeats, but there are opportunities for open mics and jams and things like that. And I would love to be part of more of like a songwriter's jam where like the jam is about like original music and feeling it out, each other's songs, and like adding harmonies and instrumental licks, which sometimes happens at the rounds as well. But just to clarify that, because people go, oh, well, I'd love to be part of your jam, or I'd like to, should I bring my guitar? And it's nothing against that. That's just not what this particular experience is. This is a listening experience with four chosen songwriters per month.
First of spring on a rainy day, middle of the night where the fallen lay, a nurse is seen from life's decay, the softened soul begins to break. They've waited for the star to fall, temperature has come to call, nocturnal creatures from all around awaken from the underground. Night crawlers above the ground.
A portion of Eric Spahn performing his song Night Crawler. You can find both Eric and Josh Noren wherever you get your music. For more information about Songwriters in the Round and the Meteor Guitar Gallery, you can find Lacey Hampton on Facebook. We're going to hear more songs from that session that Sophie Narani had with those musicians later this week on Ozarks at Large. A lot to get done later this week on Ozarks. Ozarks is a production of 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville. Contributors today included Daniel Carruth, Sophie Narani, and Randy Wilburn. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for being with us.
KUAF is supported by the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, empowering the social mobility of its students and the economic growth of the River Valley since 1928 through educational opportunities and community partnerships. More information at uafs.edu.